It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
And that is why it keeps ticking, but they say it probably won't explode, so...
It just makes me nervous.
No, that's why I called them, yeah. But, you know, well, science.
Okay, I'll trust you, but...
They said probably.
But usually when I trust you, it doesn't work out very good.
I wouldn't advise it.
Well, I don't really
but
have a choice.
This time we're trusting them, not me.
But I didn't talk to them, you did. I'm trusting...
That's true, you are trusting that I...
You actually talked to them and you're telling me the truth about what they said.
Did I actually talk to them?
Oh, jeez.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world that stays crunchy in milk.
It's the only one that does that?
Yeah, no, I've tested.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Do we add something to it for that to work, or is it just a happy...
Trade secret.
Oh. Oh, that's why you don't tell me, because you're afraid I'll blab it.
You remember, who was it? It was some detergent or something. That had the ancient Chinese secret.
Calgon.
Oh, my God. The 80s had it. The 90s are the ones that always amaze me of just how much stuff we apparently didn't realize was super racist. And I know that's like, no, we did. We just didn't care. But I'm like, no, I was there. I remember watching these things, not thinking it was super racist. And I watch them now. So super racist. It's amazing. Anyway, I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and I don't remember what number episode this is.
Get the fuck out.
No, I really don't.
I believe you. I'm
wow,
telling
this
you
is,
to get out.
This is the first time in a long time I... I don't remember.
I'm going to guess it's 267.
Yeah, that sounds right, but I just don't remember at all.
Mm.
I forgot to check before I came.
This is why we can't have nice things.
Wow, this is the first time in a long time I've fudged that.
But you don't know how many episodes because you can't count back because you don't know what episode this is. So I just have to take your word for this long time.
Man.
Know?
I mean, I didn't even look before. Usually I have to look before I come because I don't remember.
Well,
I didn't do it.
Stay tuned next week, kids, when we hold an intervention for William. Used to be. You didn't check what episode number it was every once in a while. Now it seems like every week you just can't wait to get your fix of not checking what number it is. Irregularities aside, let me tell you how the show works. We have a hat. It's magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And people, not unlike yourselves, possibly even yourselves, write in to that address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little notes, comments, topics, questions, things like that. The hat, all on its own, transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them that manifest physically within the hat itself. It's servants. I said it really quick.
Mm-hmm.
Draw the note cards out of the hat at random, read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored, do that for about an hour. That is the show, and we've been doing it we don't know how many times, but approximately 267. 260 something, that's for sure.
66, 67. Not somewhere probably not 68, there. Probably.
Alright then.
I just don't remember.
So... How was your week?
Let's see. It was good. You know, I've been helping David playtest that game or whatever.
Yeah.
So we did that since last we talked. That was fun. I'm still not sure how much I can say about it, except it's a game that he's developing. It's quite cool. And this is our second time playtesting. He's had four sessions. of people playing it and mm-hmm. and changing it a little bit each time. So so we were there for the first one, and now we were there for the fourth one, and there were two other people there. Before, it was David, his wife, and me and my wife. This time, it was Dave running it, obviously. Me and my wife, and two other people. But not his wife, because she was doing other things. Oh. Not David's wife. But, so it was interesting to play it with two people who hadn't ever, you know, didn't have any experience with it whatsoever.
I always find it interesting to game with new gamers. I mean, it's risky, but...
One thing I can say about it, I think, is that the setting is 19th century England, and so far it's been London when we've played.
Mm.
I don't know if he's going to sort of nail that down, or if he's going to nail down a particular time period.
Mm.
Because as much as people, especially gamers, like 19th century things, I've just noticed that, like, you know, I don't just mean, like, steampunk people. I mean, geeks in general seem to have some kind of affinity for the 19th century.
It's a popular
thing, yeah. A lot of people, including myself, once we get into a role-playing kind of scenario, we realize quickly a lot of the things we don't know about it. You know what I mean? Specific things that would come up in a role-playing setting.
Yeah.
Especially if it's set in London, for example, you know, and you there's a things are going to happen in a particular place. Well, you know,
what's a good place?
Yeah, what's a good place in
Did
London?
Did that even exist?
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I'm talking about. And you know what? You know what technologies? What countries? I mean, you know, before 1870, Germany, as we know it, didn't exist.
Yeah.
So can you talk about Germany? Or so is this like? In the 1890s, where there's, you know, certain technologies, and Nikola Tesla is inventing things, and Edison is inventing things, or is this in the 1870s when electricity isn't really a thing except as a hobby, or
except and Dracula trying to create free energy
or whatever? You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
There's just a lot of stuff there that you just realize you don't know. And it kind of makes
when you ask the GM, and then it's his damn problem.
Well, it can make the gameplay kind of clunky. As much as you like it, as much fun as you think it is to pretend you're in the London in the 19th century, you find yourself at a loss about just the most fundamental basic things.
I find there are bits of that anytime you're trying to play real world in a different time other than present or future, which I guess means past. I got there. Even if you're like setting a game in like the 1980s, you get things where like, we'll just use, wait, when was the cell phone invented?
Yeah, right.
You know?
Right.
You get, I think I've done it before where it's even been like, I just wanted to specify a year. So I went back a couple years so that we could like, so that I could predict the future easier in terms of the way things were going. And we'd have stuff where like, wait, that happened a year ago, so that didn't happen
right
yet.
And it, the same thing happens with this, you know, like how you're going to get from point A to point B.
Yeah.
Oh, wait a minute, they didn't have cars, you know, because it's, you know, you sometimes forget because you know there people were talking about automobiles and there were experimental automobiles and types of automobiles in the late 19th century. So if it's late enough, you could reasonably, maybe someone just for fun, you could throw into the game, someone could have a battery-powered car or an early model car, but maybe not. Or, well, were there subways? You know, when did subways happen in London in the 19th century? And so, and also when you're playing female characters,
it gets what really... What rights do I have?
What can I actually do? What can I say I'm a doctor or a lawyer? Can I do that? Which, you know, I found out later when I researched it for London in most of the 19th century, probably not. You could by late 19th century, maybe be a female doctor, but you'd have to have your own practice, and they wouldn't have let you work in the hospitals and so on. The safest thing, if you're going to play a female in 19th century, is to be married and not work, or, you know, you could be you could work in a laundry, or you could be a housekeeper, or you could be an elderly woman whose husband has died, and now you're renting out rooms in your house. I mean, there are jobs you can have,
yeah.
But they're not like, you're not going to be a doctor or a lawyer or a scientist, no. Unless you're not from England. You could be from the United States, and, you know, visiting from the United States and be one of those things. So you know, it's you don't think when you sit down, oh, we're just going to have fun playing a game in the 19th century, but it seems like a player's always asking a question like, and so then my character does it. Wait a minute, does that make sense in the 19th century? Can I do that?
Why I don't even set real world things in other countries. I have thought many times about setting something in like London, especially because I would know it better than my players.
Sure, sure.
But it's too risky. When I was in London, I played in a vampire LARP twice. Oh. I think I've mentioned this before. And I didn't bring a character with me, so we kind of threw one together. So I was somebody's, basically, a certain person's ghoul or retainer. But my actual day job kind of thing was I was a CIA agent. Mm. And so we were discussing, you know, we're just putting the finishing touches in, like, what I have on me and stuff. I'm like, so I assume I have, like, a service pistol or something. And they stopped, and they're like, we're going to have to talk to the GM. And they're like, so he is American, would he have a... And I was like, oh yeah, you can't just fucking have a pistol in England. Didn't even occur to me. I just assumed, you know, I'm a guy in federal branch of it, law enforcement, I'm going to have a gun. But I'm in a country where you're not allowed to.
Yeah.
Didn't even think. So yeah, I don't even like to set things in other countries. But now you got me wondering if science fiction and fantasy and stuff like that is such popular genres to write in because you can forego a lot of that. You don't have to worry about those bits and pieces. You can make them up as you go along.
No, that's true. I also think that, you know, as Dave is handling the game, I think from what I can observe, and he can correct me if I'm wrong here, I suppose, you know, he's trying to walk a line. He doesn't want the game to be too constrained in terms of time and place.
Yeah.
And you know, it doesn't have to be, you know, like most things that gamers and geeks like in 19th century, it doesn't have to be in our universe. That's a big thing too.
But playtesting makes it a bigger thing. If this is just a group playing a game, like happens with us, we're just like, you know, I'm going to hand wave. It actually came up one time with one of my newer players. There was something, it was a space game, and I did something that didn't quite jibe with the laws of physics, and they pointed it out. And the physicist in my group was like, yes, we know, but it's a trope we work with because they have this kind of thing. It's science fiction. Just run with it. and that's what we'll do with anything. We'll be like, was it, if somebody brings up a question like that, did they have? I'll be like, okay, GM Fiat, yes or no. And in our world, that's what it's going to be.
Well, the thing about this game, though, and again, I don't want to get too far into it, as far as its details, but there, one of its selling points, as you know, for being such a cool and fun game, is there's certain aspects of authenticity, right? Like there are certain aspects of it that sort of pull you into the 19th century in a way.
Okay.
So that sort of raises the stakes for knowing what makes sense. If that, you get what I'm trying to say?
Yeah.
If the whole 19th century London angle was just an afterthought, that would be one thing. But there are specific narrative reasons that 19th century London is being picked, and there are certain game mechanics that are employed to heighten the sense of authenticity of you being in this place and time. So then it gets a little weirder when these questions come up and we don't know the answer. Do you follow what I'm trying to say?
I do.
So, but I still, also I don't know what the solution is going to be. Dave's really good at this kind of thing, so I'm sure he'll figure it out. For me as a player, so far, I like to think of, okay, this is the year and maybe even the month in the 19th century in London that this is taking place, and that's how I'm going to know what's what and what's where and how's how, you know. But of course, other players are going to come up with other things, and Dave's going to go with that because that's the kind of GM he is. He likes the players to sort of create it as they go. He likes a lot of narrative freedom.
Commercially, the most common answer is you have a chapter in your book that's like the daily lives of people in the setting.
Well, yeah, that's another thing is, I mean, eventually he's going to probably put together some kind of guide, and also that'll also include, character suggestions, you know, because that's another thing that's come up both times we played is, because Dave's playtesting and because his approach is to give a lot of freedom to his players, you know, he kind of tries to let them sort of figure out for themselves what kind of character they're going to have. But over time, I'm sure he'll notice that certain characters recur, or it might be fun to have certain character suggestions in a guide.
Yeah.
Because so far I've played two very different kinds of characters in it. And now, when we play again, we're gonna keep the characters because now he's kind of trying to see if it
won't, how a campaign works.
Yeah, it won't just work as a one shot, but it's how a campaign might work. So. But, I mean, the game itself is quite ingenious, I think, and it's fun to play. And as certain things get fixed or corrected or improved, it gets even better, which is pretty amazing considering, I mean, we first played it, we liked it just the way it was. But he's taken certain things, minor weaknesses, and improved them, and it's even better now, so it's going to be fun to keep playing it. And the two other players are great. One was a person we didn't know, we just met, but the other person we were kind of familiar with, had played games with before in the Games on Demand thing. So I look forward to other sessions. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. It's outside from, I'm still working on all my projects and stuff. Outside from all that, that was really the only major news from the last week for me, I think. What about you?
Bunch of stuff. I went home to see my in-laws for my nephew's birthday. That was a fun trip, marked especially by the fact that the kids were great. Like, they're getting old enough. They just don't, like, do stupid, shitty kid things so much. Still a little bit, but. I think once or twice somebody's like had to be like knock it off or whatever, but there was not, at no point was like, oh my god, get rid of these kids. Like, they were just fine. And my niece's choir is really good. I think there's a delivery person here of some sort. Drez, your food's here.
Hello.
Hey there.
How are you?
I'm good, how are you?
All right, here's what you do. Are you actually coming out?
What?
Are you actually coming out?
To get food, yeah.
I didn't think you had pants on. You usually don't.
I do have pants on.
That's sneaky.
Hey,
I was going to have him.
I got my pants on.
I was going to have him put it like midway down the hall, and then he'd have to leave, and you could come. And no, I didn't. You're special. She doesn't wear pants for just everybody.
Well, I feel privileged.
Yep. What was I talking about?
I don't know.
Oh, my niece and every. My niece
probably
was.
Probably about Fallout.
Nope. My niece had a choir concert on Friday, and they were really good. Like, I'm still confused that they're that good. It's a bunch of 4th to 8th graders, but they really did a great job. And then, yep, still playing Fallout. Thunderdome is undergoing major renovation.
What is that?
Complications with the arena stuff. When you assign something to one of the red or blue pads, they immediately are hostile towards the other color, which means if you don't, so like, put them in separated rooms to start with, like, as soon as you assign the second one, like, they just immediately go, so, like, you'd have to get out of the way, and it's kind of crazy. So I was like, okay, we'll make a staging or holding area, like, underneath. Not enough room underneath. So the arena floor is now going to be entirely staging and holding areas, and everything up else is going up one. Mm. I'm going to build another floor, which is a pain because I had an elaborate platform all around the outside with railings on both sides, a fusion reactor that wired up the whole thing with light and everything like that. So I'm going to have to move all of that up. But working on that. I'm writing a book, I think.
Really?
I'm about 2,500 words into it. Yeah, something popped into my head the other night. In fact, it fucked me up. I couldn't get to sleep. I was up for a while. An idea that kind of takes a couple of... I've had, I'd say, two major book ideas in my head for decades now that just never went anywhere. And so it kind of takes those, and it takes some ideas that I've had for maybe RPG games I was going to run in the future and sort of put them all together. And it's really incomplete. Like, I don't have a plot. I have, like, a premise. But the point is also just trying to get me to write. So I'm just writing. And what I'm going to do is I'm just going to write until it's book-sized.
Huh.
And it'll be shit, but then I'll go back and make it cleaner, and then I'll have people like you and Trish like read it and go through that stuff. But the trick right now, I'm really trying to leverage my creativity, so I'm really working hard. I'm not outlining, I'm not creating a list of dramatis personae, that kind of thing. Just writing, seeing what happens.
So this is a real deal. You're really going to do this?
Apparently. I mean, it's me, so I'm sure not. But so far, I did 2,500 words.
Don't get my hopes up.
And so far, I mean, it's a really mundane intro so far, but I really liked writing it, so.
Good.
Well,
I hope you...
We'll see.
I hope to follow through.
I'm thinking
I'm really
in a much more commercial and marketing kind of way, to a degree, because there's a lot of stuff where I'm like, no, you shouldn't have that in the story, you should do it this way, because that's what a published story would do, and I'm trying to walk that line between... lots of good genre tropes and things because people like them, but also not so far that it's clearly just a copy of some other author. You know, so that's a really weird place. I mean, I think you'd essentially call it modern fantasy, but who knows? And then just a lot of things that I want to do, like it's a first person story, and the protagonist is, female queer 20-something. And at the same time, somebody was asking, they're like, are you going to put a lot of erotica stuff in it? I'm like, it may come out, but that's not... I don't want that to be initially the point, because to me, that's one of the things. If you have a female protagonist, especially one who's at all queer, odds are it's going to be a lot about the sexy. And I'm like, I want to make it a little different. I don't know. So we'll see. I'm actually trying not to talk about details too much because of the whole thing. You tell somebody and then you feel like you've done something, so then you don't do it. We've talked about this.
Yeah,
it's a psychological thing. Yeah. You tell somebody about your idea and that satisfies the part in your brain, and then you don't actually do it.
See, the exact opposite happens to me. I tell somebody about something I'm doing, and then I feel more obligated to actually.
And the rest of humanity, other way. So, as a part of the rest of humanity, I'm not saying too much at this point.
I'm very excited about this, but I don't. I feel like I shouldn't be.
No, you should not.
Because,
because I'm gonna wimp out at some point real soon.
But I don't. You're making me conflicted here because
hope for the best, prepare for the worst.
But I don't know what to do. Like, if it were anyone else who just told me this, you know, providing there's someone who I think could actually pull this off. You know, I'm not good at fake enthusiasm. I mean, if someone who I'm very certain can't do this is saying they're going to do it, I can't pretend, oh, that's awesome.
I feel like that's the thing. I feel like with anybody else, you'd also have a clear idea in your head of whether they would or would not do it.
Or whether they could or could not.
Also.
That's kind of what I'm getting at. But okay, so here I am talking to someone who I know can do it.
Yeah, no. I am willing to confidently say... I have the ability to write a shitty first draft of a novel. I have that power.
I have confidence that you could complete it, and it would be awesome. All of that. But there's this issue of whether or not you will do it. And so normally, if someone who I know can do it says, hey, I'm doing this thing, I would be very excited, and I would be very encouraging, you know, genuinely encouraging, because, like, I really want to read whatever it is you have to write, mm-hmm. or whatever it is you have to say. But and all of that applies to you, except
yep.
I also know that, oh, wait, you know, so I don't know what to do, because...
Well, but you also know the silver lining is I give you all my ideas that I don't use. So if I end up not doing it, I'll just give you what draft I have, and you can make it.
No, maybe, but the thing is, I do...
Because there's at least something already. There's at least 2,486 words or something.
I do want to encourage you, but I don't know how. And to be honest, I mean, if I'm really honest with myself, I don't think I know how to encourage anybody. But with anyone else, it would just come naturally. And maybe everything I do is wrong when I try to encourage someone. I don't know. But with you, I start to do what I would normally do, and I'm like, oh, wait, no. So I don't know what would encourage you. What
money. Money would encourage me.
Would it really? Seriously? Like, if someone came and said, finish this, Tony, I'll give you $10,000 advance, and then we'll work out what you'll get when you're finished with it. That would motivate you to finish it?
If somebody paid me such that I could be either quit or skip work, like take a leave of absence somehow, yeah, I think so.
Hmm.
If it's a job, I'd do a job. Ask my boss. She listens to the podcast.
Right.
I do my job. So when it's my job, that's the thing. I work hard not to let down other people. It's only when I'm the only one being let down that I don't work so hard. So if you could convince me, that's a trick for you. If you could convince me how important to you and how much it would mean to you if I did this, that might leverage me somewhat, but it would largely be through guilt. So.
Exactly, and that kind of goes against, I don't like to guilt people into
but
things.
But it's like, and this is weird to say because our house is a pit, but here's the thing. Our house, as messy as it is, way better than either of our places were when we lived separately. Because a little bit, we both clean up a little more out of a sense that we need to clean up for the other person.
All right, well, I'll tell you this because it's honest. I would love for you to complete this project and for me to have something that you've written to read, because I'm sure it would be so awesome. And it would mean a lot to me to have that. I don't want to guilt you by saying that, but it is true. It is a
okay,
fact.
Okay, Mom.
It is true. That
yeah,
I would,
we'll see. The problem I need a conflict and a plot. I don't have that yet. So,
yeah, but
I would need that. That would be useful.
You can come up
well,
with that so easily,
what's
though.
What's interesting is what I wrote. Look, I had none of what I wrote when I started writing. I had the opening. Maybe four sentences. Because I remember from years ago, very big deal is the first sentence of your book.
Yeah.
So I came up with what I thought was a really good one. And I started with that. And I had like two or three sentences afterwards. Because I was like, okay, how do we turn this into starting to talk?
Mm.
And I sort of did that. And that was it. I didn't even have the initial scene.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote it. I wrote it, two or three sittings, but over the space of a few hours. And it's a story so far. Like, it's not a free writing exercise. It's a story.
Mm-hmm.
And it's totally out of my ass.
Well, how long of a book do you think it'll be?
I don't know. Because I don't know what's going to happen.
Oh, yeah.
But that's the thing. I'm just going to write, and narrative is coming out. And so far, it's really small. It's very much scene setting. It was the main character going out to lunch and talking with me and stuff like that. But it's flowing to me like a story, and things are already have my next section. I guess my second chapter sort of has stuff happening, but only really minorly. But it feels like a story. And I pulled it out of my ass as I was writing. So I'm really gonna be curious. I feel like this is not a good way to write a book in general. You should outline, you should come up with an overall plan. But I feel like the way I tend to think and operate, this might be perfect. I mean, which doesn't mean it won't need metric tons of revision.
Yeah, yeah. My understanding is there's no right way. And for me personally, the only real reason to do all that pre-work that you were talking about, like mapping it out and stuff, is just to save you time later in rewrites. Because what'll happen is you'll go through the thing and you'll go, oh, this, you know, I'm two-thirds of the way through this story and this should happen. But now I'm realizing that there should be little things setting it up the whole way.
Yeah.
And there's no easy way to do that except to start all over and just read it. And, okay, here's one of those places. Read it. Here's one of those places.
Yeah.
And keep doing that over and over and over again. And that can be really tedious. So that's the thing you're kind of avoiding by doing a lot of pre-work in terms of plot and all that stuff. But a lot of people don't mind rewrites. You know, they don't care if they have to do 20 rewrites because they appreciate the process you're just talking about, where the free kind of writing the first draft all the way through, because the fact of the matter is, maybe you'll only have 2 rewrites when you do that. You know, maybe you won't have 20. You just don't know.
Yeah, no, I'm not liking this because of the rewrites. No, it's mostly, it's just, it's counterintuitive to me. My intuition says do it the other way. But I think I'm best with stories when I sort of improv them. That's honestly, my best stuff in GMing tends to come from that too. I will create structures, and then it turns out those structures really don't work.
Right.
And it's often very frustrating. And then other times I'm like, this. And
but while my really experience well. With role-playing is limited, obviously, so far, one thing I've noticed is that if you took any given role-playing session, even a really good one, and then decided, I'm going to write a novel based on that role-playing session, you know, there are a lot of things that you would have to fix, because in the experience of the players, it was like, wow, that was a really fulfilling experience, and this was a cool callback here and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But in an actual transcript of the game, and there was maybe a lot of things missing.
Oh yeah.
That wouldn't make that work in the case of a novel.
Oh yeah, people try and do that, and people do both versions. They try and turn a role-playing campaign into a novel, or they try and make a role-playing game based on a novel they've been writing, and both are pretty universally shitty. The only exception ever, I believe, was The Record of the Lodoss War, which was a Japanese anime based on a D&D campaign.
Well, I wouldn't assume that you're going to have a lot of rewrites. I mean, you've got a lot of experience as a reader and as a GMer. I mean, it could be that you can do this whole process.
Okay, I'm going to stop you just for a second here to say, never say the term GMer again. Not a thing. Doesn't exist.
Okay, whatever.
It sounds like mom's trying to understand RPGs.
Whatever. I'm just saying, you've done this kind of thing before, so it might be that you won't have to do. I mean, you're going to have to do some rewrites, obviously, but maybe not very many. I almost
feel like that's the bigger hurdle. Am I going to be willing to do rewrites after? I feel like I probably will, because in theory, I'll have a novel, and so that'll be it. That's probably the hard part, is writing a novel. It's probably the hard part of writing a novel.
Well, it depends on who you are, I suppose.
Yeah. For me, probably. So I might get some momentum out of the fact that I wrote a novel. Maybe I should touch it up a little bit.
Well, the first rewrite's pretty easy because you're just going to go back and read what you wrote.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, and I'm looking forward to just making other people fucking read it and comment on it. And then I sit back and relax. But the plan is, if I do this, it's good. I'm going to try and publish it somehow, possibly self. And then you are going to tell me all of those things that you say you now realize you could have done for yours to market better. And I'm going to do those things. And then mine is going to become hugely successful, and I'm going to become rich and famous. And you are going to live the rest of your life in constant denial of the low-level resentment you have over my success.
Oh, why would I resent you being successful? That's
See, it's already starting.
I would not resent that. Why would I resent it? That doesn't make any sense.
Because it was supposed to be yours.
No. I don't think like that.
No, you don't admit to it. It's already festering in there. I can feel it. You're like, he's going to be awesome. And it should be me. You're internal, like your unconscious internal monologue hisses a lot. I don't think
people really think like that. I mean, that's something that they show in movies.
Well, lizard people.
In movies and TV, people are resentful like that. But
have been resentful like that.
Of other people's success?
Yeah, well, okay. Here's a distinction that I don't think is linguistically accurate, but an ex-girlfriend told it to me, and I've used it since because I like it.
Okay.
Distinction between envious and jealous. To be envious is to wish you had what someone else has. To be jealous is to wish you had it instead of them.
Okay.
Like I said, don't think there's any basis for it, but it makes a useful distinction when you're talking about stuff.
All right.
I have had discomfort and I guess resentment based in envy. I didn't ever begrudge anybody's success, but it's the flip side of there, but for the grace of God go I. It's like, oh man, if things had just been a little different, or if they, you know, if I had been lucky like this in the way that they were lucky like that, then it could have been me, you know. Oh. And yeah.
See, the way I generally think of it is, wow, if that person could do it, I can do it.
Yeah,
I mean, there are differences. I noticed that they might have advantages I didn't have or whatever, but I don't really think about that. I just think if it can happen for them, it can happen for me. Maybe I have to do things a little differently. Maybe I have to do whatever. But, yeah, I just think that the more success there is in the world, the more likely I think I can be successful.
Yeah, I'm not sure economics backs that up, but...
What do you mean?
I don't know. I'm just saying. I feel like there's a glut of success at a certain point, because if everybody gets successful, then the bar goes up, and then success is redefined.
Well, I mean, I guess if you look at it in a very kind of narrow sense, I mean, I'm thinking in a broad sort of cosmic sense.
Not me.
You
know I want mean? Money.
You know what I mean? I'm thinking like.
I want to be rich.
The cosmos can smile on me just as much as it can smile on someone else.
I want to have drooling Twitter followers.
Oh, see, I don't care about any of that
stuff. I want all of that.
I don't care about any of that stuff.
Solid gold rocket car.
Nah, I don't care about any of that.
I've just mixed two different Simpsons references. Actually, I'm just mixed two parts of the same Simpsons reference together. It was a solid gold house and a rocket car.
Okay.
And millions of dollars.
Well, I hope you get it.
It was a hobo. I'm surprised you don't remember this. Mm. Kirk Douglas played a hobo
and
on The Simpsons.
Just for the record, if you're ever famous or you ever make it, there's no way I'm going to resent you for it. I'm going to be happy for you.
All right. Well, in that case, I might let you put a blurb on the back of my book.
Not only am I going to be happy for you, I'm not going to be a bit surprised, because I know you've got all the talent in the world to be able to achieve something like that.
I'm surprised that I've managed to do a podcast for over 5 years, so I'll be very surprised.
Just that you do it.
Mostly.
Okay, but what I'm saying is...
Yeah, I was raised to believe I could do anything.
I won't...
Technically, I shouldn't be surprised if I can become president, but I'd be amazed that I did it.
I won't be surprised if you write a book and it's like a bestseller or whatever, because I know, or I feel pretty confident anyway, that you can do that.
Wow. She wants you bad.
What is that about?
I don't know. She's... Well, I mean, I think she wants you to pet her, but yeah, apparently she just needs some loves right now. Ezzy is all over.
She didn't William. Used to be that way.
She's had her moments. I mean, they get moods, like everything.
I guess.
Yeah, she is all, technically speaking, according to science, she's basically marking you.
Yeah.
She's saying, you don't smell enough like me.
That's right.
And so she's working on that. But mostly, she's just humping the shit out of your leg.
No, she's not.
We always talk about her boyfriend. Coffee had to watch them when we were gone for the weekend.
Oh.
And she totally fell in love with them. And they appeared to like her pretty good. She was sending photos of them sitting on her lap and stuff. So.
Oh, that's sweet.
I think she likes our cats because they're kind of active compared to hers.
Mm.
So they do like funny cat things and she thinks that's hilarious. Yeah, so we'll see. All right, so we're running out of time and there's still more stuff we got to talk about. Quick thing, rest in peace, Prince. Very sad. And rest in peace, Joni Lauder, I should think. China. was her wrestling name, but she didn't like going by that later. They both died. Prince today, maybe.
Today.
China might have died yesterday, but we heard about it. I don't remember the exact date. But yeah, they both died. Prince at 57.
Yeah.
And China at 45.
Yeah, that's just terrible.
They are both younger than I thought, and it's really sad to die that young. So that's sad. And if you're just hearing about it from us, I really am sorry. But I'm also surprised. Okay, another thing I was talking about. Last night, went to the movies.
Okay.
Saw Zootopia.
Okay.
I have a lot to say about it.
Okay.
I assume you have not seen Zootopia.
No.
Are you familiar? I like how you had to think about that.
Well, I mean, no. I was gonna speculate as to whether or not we might see it, say, in the theaters, but we probably won't.
You are familiar with what it is?
Mm-hmm.
I got slightly confused. I was mixing it up with what's going to come later, I think, called The Secret Lives of Pets.
Oh.
Which is, as near as I can tell, what that title is. Zootopia is a fictional animal world.
Right, right.
And it's Disney. And I really liked it.
Hmm.
Quite a lot. Uniquely, in similar ways that I expressed at the time about the new Mad Max movie, about Brave, about a lot of these, it hit things that other kids' movies, and certainly other Disney movies, don't.
Hmm.
And I was very impressed. First off, it's gorgeous. The art and animation is amazing.
Hmm.
They really did a nice job with it. To the degree that there's one shot that's it's a road with forest on the side, and there's a car driving down it. And I stared at it for a while, and I was like, did they just use a photo of a forest? And I couldn't tell by the end. Like, I mean, the car was very clearly animated, but the other, I was like, I'm not sure. So yeah, the art was gorgeous. The acting, and then as a corollary, the chemistry was wonderful. Huge cast. I feel a little bit bad. Almost every part was somebody that I don't think of as a voice actor initially. And so I'm like, oh man, they're taking jobs from actual voice actors. Although Maurice LaMarche did do it. But Jennifer Goodwin, Jason Bateman, which was really fun. J.K. Simmons, Jenny Slate. Who else was in there? Nate Torrance. Idris Elba. And that was really, and everybody just really performed well. But then there's the stuff that they did that you don't get a lot in these kind of things. It was a female protagonist. She wasn't a princess or anything like that. And in fact, there was none of that. I don't want to say she was completely not sexualized, because I'm sure if you look at it, there were little subtle ways, but
sure.
Like nothing overt at all.
Huh.
Not remotely a thing. Attached to that, the movie has within it a very serious, and as the movie goes, grows stronger, becomes very close and intimate and loving, really, relationship between a male and female character, who are not related, that has no even hint of romance.
Really?
That's not a thing.
Wow.
They just become really close friends.
Yeah.
It's really nice.
Yeah.
And they pushed it sort of further than I expected. Like, they really sort of bond, but in no way is it romantic or sexual at all. And that was really nice. And here's the thing, and this is the good and the bad thing. This is Disney, as kids' version, trying to talk about racism. This movie is absolutely about racism.
Really?
Yes.
Hmm.
Except in this case, it's more speciesism.
Sure, sure.
Or at least species typeism and stuff. And it's kind of awesome for that. It's also kind of terrible for that. Because here's the thing. It's really heavy-handed in it. It's really clunky in places. It does, honestly, a thing that a lot of even adults movies do when they tackle these things. It points out issues and then is guilty of them, like in the next scene, kind of thing. It does all of that, but it's a kid's it's meant to be a kid's movie, so it's super simplified, but like I feel like it's a great place to start the issue with little kids. And so I really appreciate what it was trying. I mean, there's still, it's a Disney movie, so spoiler alert, there's lessons about believing in yourself and being true to who you are, and, you know, whatever. But the movie's about racism. The movie's totally about racism. like unflinching, like at one point somebody says, you're not like one of them. And they're like, there's a them now. Like, it's about racism. But for a kid's movie, it does it pretty good. So I was fairly impressed. Obviously, the only reason to go see it in the theater is for the visual impact. But the visual impact's pretty... It could be worth it for the art. I mean, I'm definitely glad. But otherwise, you can wait. And it is absolutely a kid's movie.
Yeah.
That being said, there are some scary parts that I wouldn't have been surprised about at all in kids' movies when we were little.
Mm-hmm.
But nowadays, I'm like, this seems heavy for how we treat millennial kids.
Mm-hmm.
Just some scary things in places. But nothing real bad. I mean, I'm not worried. I wouldn't be worried about taking your kid to it. And what cracked me up is there was a kid sitting behind us who wouldn't shut up. And that was a problem his dad had to keep taking him out and bringing him back. And he kept talking. He was very familiar with the characters. They either saw it before, like he has the toys or something.
Right.
But his voice sounded exactly like the kid from Kid Snippets. That's the one who's like,
got
what
the horse
song
voice.
Am I singing?
Yeah, yeah.
I only have 1 minute left in my boy.
Yeah, that kid.
He was sitting behind me, and he was explaining stuff totally the same way. I was waiting him for to say, no, none of those things are what Beatles eat. Twy again. Like, it was weird. But yeah, so pretty pleased. I mean, it's a kid's movie. But also, this is just silly. I'm going to put this out there. Shakira's in the movie, playing Shakira, except she's a gazelle, and her name is Gazelle, but she's a pop star that comes up in it.
Mm.
And I'm like, more people need to do this. More celebrities need to do this, where you play something that's not acting a character. It's pretty much you, but it's not you. It's been fictionalized.
Mm.
So it's not as herself, but it's as something, because I feel like that's fun, because it's still publicity for you, but you can play around with it a little bit, and there's not people saying, oh god, she's like that, you know. And in this, it was purely mostly she was referred to, and the big thing is she had a single that was in the movie a couple of times, and the singer in the movie, it was her single, and so Like the end credits are over a concert with her and something. But it was also a catchy song, so that was fun. Yeah, and I didn't recognize Jennifer Goodwin's voice. She's the lead until the very end, and then I'm like, of course, because nobody does action-oriented cuteness like Jennifer Goodwin. And also, she's probably owned by Disney now after all those years on Once Upon a Time. So she's Snow White in Once Upon a Time.
Right. Are they done with that?
Last I knew, I finally went on Wikipedia and looked it all up. That show got weird. they've had at least 4 seasons so far.
Hmm.
I don't know if they're having more or not. Yes, 4 is so almost out of time. We should probably draw a thing from the thing. This wasn't even a catch-up week. I have no excuse. Well, it's mostly because I'm writing a book and William's impressed.
I am impressed, and I'm excited. Coffee!
Coffee! We were just talking about you. Coffee's having a sad day. Coffee loved Prince.
Oh.
Did not go well.
Well, my condolences, Coffee. Coffee says, you've been kidnapped. What? What?
Isn't it usually the other way around? Aren't you supposed to send a note that says, I've been kidnapped? Not a note that says, You've been kidnapped? That's weird.
This is probably hypothetical.
Let's hope so.
You've been kidnapped. You can call on all the characters from one television show to make a rescue attempt. Which show do you pick?
Easy. Either Touched by an Angel or Highway to Heaven. Seriously. There's no way you don't win in that situation.
I suppose.
There was no episode where Michael Landon was like, nope, they're just going to stay kidnapped. Like, that's not happening. I don't know. Here's the thing. If you try and steer this into what I think is in the spirit of it, which is some sort of group of relatively normal humans who could, you know, pull off a caper or something, an op, if you will, to go get you. Here's the thing. To be, you've got two options. Either a boring, shitty TV show that went off the air really fast because it was boring and shitty, or a successful TV show, which is successful because it's interesting. And it's interesting because every goddamn time they try and pull off any sort of job, something goes horrifically wrong. That's the thing. If you have a show about a SWAT team that's just successful every time and everything's normal, that show goes away real fast because it's boring.
Yeah.
You know, if I pick the team from Leverage, something is going to go horrifically wrong midway through. And I'll still probably get out okay, but in the meantime, I'm going to have a fucking heart attack when they find out the body double they set up for me is black and a woman. And, you know, that's not going to work. Something. The Leverage team would be a good one, though, wouldn't it?
I don't know.
Well, who would you pick?
I'd pick
the
Monk.
The McLaughlin group.
No, I'd pick Monk.
Monk?
Yeah.
Oh, that's going to go bad. They're going to break into, like, three houses before you. That follows the very standard thing. So they're going to go find
Seinfeld. They'll fail, but it'll be hilarious.
There you go. There you go.
No, I don't know. I wasn't even a fan of Seinfeld.
How about Cops? You know, that's just... Can we get the guys from Cops?
Nova.
Alan Alda's going to come rescue you. That's what I was like. The McLaughlin.
Cosmos.
Group. Oh, dude. Dude.
I want Carl Sagan, though. Carl Sagan to come rescue me.
He had cheaper effects.
That's okay.
No, I feel like those could matter. Is there a... There's probably a show of just like kidnapping...
Sherlock.
Catching kidnapped people. Sherlock would be a good one.
Doctor Who.
Oh, he already rescued you.
It's happened.
But he's gonna lose you again, so...
It's done.
Yeah. Doctor Who would be good. That was, I was, well, I immediately said, you know, touched by an angel. But that's the thing. I'm like, who has the most godlike powers? Like,
Supergirl.
How about, can we do Star Trek The Next Generation and Q can rescue me? There we go.
Supergirl. I'd like Supergirl to rescue me. That'd be awesome.
Never Ending Story.
It's a television show.
He just writes shit down.
Was there a television show, Never Ending Story?
I think there was a cartoon.
Oh.
I don't know, because even as a little kid who absolutely adored Never Ending Story, so much so that I was willing to forgive Never Ending Story 2, even I totally lost faith with Never Ending Story 3. Which, fun fact, stars Jack Black as the leader of the bullies.
Didn't know.
Yeah. But yeah, I think there was a cartoon. Kind of like there was a cartoon of Stargate, which I still don't understand. So you go with Monk?
Last Week Tonight, John Oliver.
There we go.
I think that's my pick.
Aqua Teen Hunger Force. Mike Tyson Mysteries.
Venture Brothers.
Oh my god. They won't rescue you, but they'll think they did because they got a clone. No, the big question is it is it going to be early Monk when you had Sharona, or is it going to be later Monk when you had that girl from
definitely,
Two Guys in a Pizza Place?
Definitely Sharona.
All right, I would agree.
Absolutely.
I feel like she'd be more effective.
But, yeah, I think that's my answer.
Monk?
I liked Monk. I thought it was good.
Other than just automatically going to superhero teams, I feel like Leverage is good. That's sort of their jam. Or no, fuck all of that. Battlestar Galactica.
Oh man,
16,000 people and a goddamn Battlestar. I don't know who will live and who will die, but somebody's gonna come get me.
Unless they decide you're a Cylon,
then which I probably am.
Then you can just forget it.
I'm probably a Cylon. See, it's weird for me because I watched that show after everybody else, but I remember watching the Robot Chicken that happened during the middle of that, where they did a Clay version of Ron Moore, voiced by Ron Moore, and he said the way he does the show is he just throws darts at a board covered with cast members, and whoever it hits is a sidewalk. So, at the time, I was like, aha, but then later I was like, dude, now I actually believe that's what he was doing at that point. And I like the show, and I believe that. I even like all four seasons.
Let's see, what else?
Cops is a really good one.
You know, couple shows that
we haven't done game show. Can we get like the cast of Wheel of Fortune?
Maybe. The couple shows I've never talked about but that are fantastic is a show called Humans. I think the BBC makes it. Have you heard of it?
No.
It's really good. And you've probably heard of Mr. Robot.
There's a guy at work who is just on my butt really to watch
good.
Mr. Robot.
Really good.
He said it's amazing.
Those two shows, these are two shows that I've watched in the last, you know, year that are probably the best shows I've seen in a long time. Humans and Mr. Robot.
Humans I hadn't heard of, but yeah,
oh, you should watch it. I think you'll like it. Mr. Robot is really good.
And you're watching Wynonna Earp now.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't occur to me at the time, but of course you had to, because two things in the world your wife loves. It's female leads in stories and westerns.
Mm-hmm. So, I actually like both of those things.
As I was telling you, I was like, well, holy crap.
And Wyatt Earp grew up in Pella, Iowa. Marion County.
Yes.
The same county I grew up in.
Yeah, you got way into the location issues.
Well, I mean, you know, when you grow up in Marion County, Iowa, you know, and you know that Wyatt Earp grew up there. He wasn't born there, but he lived there from the time he was one to the time he was like 16. So it was for all intents and purposes, this was his hometown, Pella, Iowa. And I think one of his siblings was born there. So you know this. And so he kind of becomes a guy that you know things about.
And he could have made Windows. Yeah, for those of you not in the know, Pella is kind of famous now for its windows. And
yeah,
its
Pella windows.
Dutch people.
Yes.
My
dad's dating a woman from there. I think he's going to marry her.
This is the proposal right here. What's her name? We're going to say. William's dad wants to know if you'll marry
her. No.
I don't know your dad's name either. So.
They don't listen.
There's been three episodes, I think. We've only watched two.
We've watched all three. The pilot was pretty good. Second was...
You were not so happy with the second. I like the second better. I really feel like the actors are pulling a lot of weight here, which is something you do not normally say for a Canadian-based science fiction show on the Sci-Fi Network. Acting is usually not one of the strong points you tout.
The acting is good.
Yeah, and I think it's carrying some fairly thin mythology at this point.
Yeah.
promising mythology, just very thin.
Yes.
And some uninteresting plot points.
That's right.
But the acting is carrying a lot. But yeah, I'm
and
I'm
the potential
so
for
far.
The story is good. Yeah.
Yeah. Trish was a little over. Was a little annoyed by the intensity of the very sort of girl power vibe in it, and I want to be, but I'm also like I want more of that in this kind of context. Like this is a show for grown-ups, and it has that in it. I feel like that's I like that.
Well, I thought the third episode kind of made it back close to the quality of the pilot. Cool. So we'll see how it goes. We'll probably keep watching it.
Yeah, we're still watching it and kind of enjoying it, which I don't say about a lot of shows nowadays, except like Elementary.
I don't understand its placement in Canada though. That's so weird.
Right on the border. Yeah.
I don't get it.
It's probably so that they can fucking film it in Vancouver and don't have to explain away all the shots.
They filmed Smallville in
they filmed
up
everything
there.
Up there.
Yeah, but that was supposed to be in Kansas. Nobody knew the difference.
People have been learning. I have no idea why.
It just seems like there was no need to really do that.
Well, it's made by Canadians, so it's an actual Canadian production.
Right. But it's so there's just nothing in the history that would put him there or anybody he knows there.
The history you know about. That could also be it. You make up a whole separate thing so that people, Wyatt Earp fanboys, don't bug you about issues with.
Well, he was in Seattle for a while, so I mean, he could have popped up there for any number of reasons. It was not that far from Seattle.
Also, one thing to factor, and I think this may be true of people who watch the show and the people who made the show. Again, other than you, I don't know that anybody gives a damn.
No, probably not.
The show's not super about Wyatt Earp.
Well, let me put it this way. In the show, there's a bar where one of the things that the bar sort of advertises that he drank there. So you definitely get the sense that he sort of passed through. There's a lot of places.
Oh, no, I believe in the premise of the show, that's supposed to be where he settled down.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. At the same time, sometimes people don't talk about it like that at all. But I won't get too far into it because I don't want to give anything away. But like in Iowa, you know, Jesse James gang came through and robbed a train or something, you know. So you've got all these little places in Iowa that you know, Jesse James visited here, robbed this bank. Or, you know.
So far, it seems like they're avoiding making any famous bad guys be too involved. So
that's true. Sure. That's true.
We're out of time, and I'm sick of your face, so let's get out of here. This has been a production. We don't have a thing like we love you guys. Keep listening, because otherwise it becomes really masturbatory. Even though there's two of us, it still kind of is, because we have separate mics. We don't use each other's mics.
Okay, stop
it. Wow, yeah,
stop
no.
Stop it.
I don't even know what happened.
I cannot believe.
Like us on Facebook because it gives us a sense of worth. And listen again next week. And I think that's it. And save the date for Ezzy and William's wedding.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.